Today on Movie Wild Arts, we talk about Adrift, Ocean's 8, and Hereditary. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, Trash Me.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online, streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, the show is for you. Greetings.
Good evening.
Hello.
It's World Cup season, so I'm getting delinquent on publishing of podcasts and generally everything else in life.
What is more important than film?
Exactly.
Football. Once every 4 years, I get to be...
Hooligan.
A complete
hooligan.
Football slash hooligan. Soccer fanatic.
Hooligan.
And England won today. Yay! Which always makes me happy because they never win there.
But... Yeah, against Tunisia.
Yeah, Joe, it doesn't really Ouch. Count.
Just Come kidding. On.
For England to win against anyone is a good thing for me. It's also a remarkable feat.
Yes.
Considering the country is so soccer obsessed.
Considering it's anything true. Other than cricket.
It's
a big deal.
That's right. Cricket is your game.
Correct.
Well, yes, I don't see you getting excited about...
Those days are behind me. I used to get excited about
cricket. About cricket or tennis? I thought you loved tennis, too.
I like tennis, too.
Yeah, I love tennis.
If I have to watch something on television, I'd rather watch tennis than cricket. Cricket me is too. Just, like, too much investment of time.
Oh, no, I liked cricket, though. I like the World... I like the World Cups.
Yeah, but that's 5 days of all-day watching. People do it.
It's a big investment.
Yes.
All right, well, we have 3 movies to talk about, so then I can go and carry on.
And we have 2 innings.
Watching.
See what I did there?
Yes.
Oh, very good. I was just going to say, I want to get through this so that I can go back and watch some more football. But either way, are we going to do Netflix picks? Did we have time to do that today? Or let's skimp on another Netflix pick, perhaps? Yeah. And maybe...
Our next episode will only be 2 movies, and we will...
So we'll put one in there.
We'll put one in there, yes.
So sorry, home movie fans that listen to our picks.
Although I will give a shout-out to Hulu and The Handmaiden, which I'm watching.
The Handmaid's Tale.
Handmaid's Tale, not The Handmaiden. That was also a very good movie that's currently playing on Netflix, I think. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but both. I haven't seen The Handmaid's Tale.
And just to explain the in joke there, Handmaid's Tale is the Elizabeth Olsen.
Correct.
Elizabeth Moss.
Why do I call it Olsen? Yes, Elizabeth Moss. Dystopian, futuristic tale that was very well received. And The Handmaiden is a movie that we watched a couple of years ago,
which is excellent.
Which is very good. I think we all liked it. I don't think we reviewed it formally on the podcast.
No, we didn't.
It was nominated last year for Best Foreign Film.
But it's rather raunchy in places.
It's very fruity.
It is
very
indeed.
Fresh,
as it should be.
But it is a good movie.
It's a great movie.
And boy, did it get me with its plot twists. So.
Yes.
Anyway, so that's The Handmaiden on Hulu or Netflix?
Hulu.
Terrific. All right. Let's talk about our 3 movies then. So we have in this podcast, we're going to talk about Adrift, Ocean's 8, and Hereditary. Where would you like to start?
Let's start in the ocean.
In the ocean. With Adrift or the oceans?
Ooh, I didn't...
Adrift in the ocean. And who's going to tell us about that?
I will.
Okay. So.
Being promoted for a long, long, long time. I remember seeing its previews like on television. I don't watch much television, but what little I watched, there was Adrift all over the place.
Yeah, it is. It's only been out a few weeks at the minute. Yeah. So this is actually based on the true story of survival. A young couple's chance encounter leads them first to love and then on an adventure of a lifetime as they face one of the most catastrophic hurricanes in recorded history. It's directed by Baltasar Kormákur, and it's written by Tammy Ashcroft, who actually wrote the book, who the story is based on. and Aaron Candle, and it stars Shailene Woodley, Sam Claflin, who we've been speaking about quite a lot in recent podcasts, Grace Palmer, and a few others. Main characters really are Shailene Woodley and Sam Claflin, and this really does rest on their shoulders. So with that, it is a movie that we all saw. Is this one worth the voyage? Yeah, Steve, why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, I'd say definitely. I'd seen previews, like I said, I'd seen previews of the film, and I was kind of worried it would be that we had seen the whole movie by virtue of the preview. But I'm glad to see that everything that you see in the previews happens in the first half hour of the film or in the first 45 minutes, and then there's a lot more. And I think what I would recommend is, although this is based on a script by, you know, the book this was written by, the person who actually went through this, I would strongly recommend people not find out anything about it. Never mind. I won't even go there. But for me, the element of surprise really played very well in this movie. And I like these kinds of films. I like movies about, you know, one or two people against nature. And, you know, they've been dealt a really bad hand and, you know, how they try to survive. Because I think if I was ever in a situation where I was adrift in the middle of the ocean, I would just die from being depressed that nobody's ever going to find me. I would probably drink all the salt water and hasten my death. So it always amazes me that, you know, people kind of survive through this. And so even within this genre, you know, we've seen Gravity and we've seen All Is Lost and we have seen, you know, gosh, so many films like this. I think even by those standards, the movie kind of holds together pretty well. It's constructed reasonably well, and it plays out well. I liked it. It surprised me. I expected it to not be as good as it turned out.
Joe?
I'm not going to be quite as complimentary. I mean, this is not a horrible movie, but I think when I compare it to the movie you just mentioned, The All Is Lost with Robert Redford from a couple of years ago, a movie with substantially less dialogue, a movie I think it only had like one word of dialogue, that word was a curse word. That movie just provided for me the sense of loss and desperation and isolation that this kind of shipwrecking would have wielded upon the protagonist. I always felt somehow, and I'm not going to blame the actor for this, but I think it's the way that the movie cuts back and forth to kind of tell its two different stories. Yeah. Always kind of took me out of that moment of sheer desperation, of sheer isolation. So the story kind of plays out as a series of flashbacks. You know, we see the catastrophic event occur relatively early on in the movie, and then we learn about the relationship that this woman had with the other people. And I think while that may be an interesting way of, you know, writing a book, I think as a movie, the change in atmosphere was a little too much for me to deal with. And so I never quite felt as fearful for her in her situation, because I felt as if the other story was going to lead us to, you know, safety, so to speak. But, you know, as a movie, it sets out to do what it does and it accomplishes that. So it's okay.
So if this didn't state that it was true up front, I wouldn't have believed that this was actually real.
It's a remarkable story. Yeah. I'll give you that.
I mean, that being said, this felt like the baby movie of Titanic, the baby yacht version, and The Life of Pi. Mm-hmm. That's not to say I think it's bad, but parts of it felt very Lifetime. And I think that had something to do with the way that the dialogue was constructed for me. I feel like it didn't have any guts, and it felt a little ham-fisted. It did nothing to alleviate my fear of open water, though. I didn't love it. I really do feel like it teetered too much on that Lifetime movie border for me.
I know exactly what you mean. I think the movie is remarkably toothless and bloodless, and yeah. I think maybe they were skirting that PG rating or the PG-13 right. rating, and said they didn't want it to get terribly upsetting, because the story is pretty upsetting, right?
Yeah.
It's these two people leave on this boat, and essentially they go through one of the worst storms in recorded history, and And horrible things happen to both of them. But it seems a little pat. It kind of glazes over some of the more objectionable, more disturbing events. You know, you don't even see, like, you know, there's barely a scene of somebody's bone jutting out, you know. I mean, and that's the level of gruesomeness that it goes through. But a lot of gruesome things happened. And so it kind of, it's a curious choice because this particular filmmaker, Baltazar Kormusker, he's kind of an over-the-top filmmaker. He made Wanted. Remember that movie with Angelina Jolie?
I didn't see that one. Another one you mean.
Yes.
I think you're a big fan of that one, too.
I love that movie. I own the DVD. It's so good. It's so over-the-top, or deep-fried. So he exercises some restraint here. And Joe, I think you completely nailed it. Like All Is Lost with Robert Redford, this movie almost identically begins in the same place.
Where yes.
The movie starts with her waking up, finding that her boat is completely flooded and she's in the middle of nowhere. And it starts from this place of terror and kind of, you would have thought it kind of goes from there, but actually it's a very odd choice where the movie deliberately kind of loops back in time. It keeps going back and forth in time to tell the story about how she met this person, who she used to be, etc. And what that does is, while it may seem gimmicky or what have you, but it diffuses the tension every time. Yes. Every time you go back to happier times, it diffuses the tension of where she is at right now at that particular place. So I think, I mean, in my notes I actually wrote, I would actually want to see a chronological version of this movie where everything just plays out in real time. And I want to see, it would make for a really amazing last 1 hour of the movie, I think.
And that's probably what made it feel a little bit Lifetime, because to me, I didn't mind that it went back because the going back gave the character the strength to go forward in a sense, right? It was based on these memories and this that gave her kind of the will to live and figure out how to make the next survival decision. So I didn't mind that so much. And I think the editing itself was good, but you're absolutely right. Diffuse the tension then. And that's when we get all the hammy dialogue, right? When we're back and all of the falling in love is happening.
Yeah.
And I didn't get a good sense of chemistry. Like, I couldn't believe that these two people would actually be together. So it all just felt a little bit forced to me.
So I that's one place where I really disagree with you, because I wrote in my notes that one thing the movie has going for it is I really sensed very good chemistry between those two actors, between Shailene Woodley and
Sam Kalfin.
Klafkin, or however you pronounce his last name. And, you know, this movie is, I think, produced by Shailene Woodley.
Or yes, correct. By her.
So she has a lot invested in this movie. So I really believe the two of them, that they were both kind of lost spirits. They were both kind of lost. And, you know, the movie doesn't shy away from the fact that, you know, she was kind of purposeless and she was doing drugs. And it doesn't paint her necessarily as this perfect person, which I'm sure that's how the book is written. But the movie kind of sticks with that adaptation. And he likewise is a person who is kind of drifting. You know, he just likes to get on his boat and just go across the world. And these two kind of souls meet together, and then through a it's quite fascinating, through a series of circumstances they land up, you know, taking this boat for somebody else. So I did believe that part, and you know, Shailene Woodley, she's so good in Pretty Little Liars. Was that it, Pretty Little Liars? No.
What, or Descendants?
The one on HBO with Nicole Kidman.
Big Little Lies. Yeah, oh my God, so she's incredible in that. All two episodes that I watched.
Yeah, she's so good in that. And here again, she's very, very believable. She invests a lot.
Yes.
She looks like somebody who's
being, I mean, she looks like she needs to eat a sandwich.
Correct. And so I think everybody has kind of put a lot into it. There's a great take in this film. I really don't know how they filmed it, where they've just met, she and her British boyfriend, they've just met in Tahiti, that's where they are at. And she takes him to this, her secret spot. And, you know, she kind of brings him to the edge of this mountain and she essentially jumps off.
Cliff diving.
And then she kind of taunts him that he should do the same, and he cannot believe that she's asking him to do that, but then he decides he will. And it's all a single take, and as he jumps in, the camera follows him. It's a single take, and it goes all the way underwater. So I don't know if they used a crane or if they used CGI or what, but the
GoPro.
I don't know what, but it is just beautifully done.
So,
I mean, the movie has a lot going for it visually as well. I don't want to make this movie to be more than it is. It has definitely has its shortcomings, but I think there's enough in it to recommend.
You know, I normally notice those kind of things because I'm a big fan of, you know, kind of clever cinematography. I didn't miss that.
You were lost in the love of it all, James.
Evidently, yeah. I was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I completely missed that. All right.
I haven't got too much more to say about this. I agree with you. I think Shailene Woodley gives a really good performance and it's very physical. I mean, she's got to do a lot in this movie. I mean, she basically carries this movie.
Yeah.
And I feel bad because I feel like if it had a bit more guts, I would be saying Shailene Woodley potential for Oscar best nominee. Actress. Right. Yeah, but
the movie doesn't make it for me.
Yeah,
goes to the edge and comes back. Keeps going to the edge and comes back.
I know. Rather like the cliff dive that never happens.
Yeah, they should have jumped off the
cliff. Yeah, they should have. Yeah. Okay, I can wrap this one up. This won't make you seasick for sure. It's a good break from the summer superhero movies, but keep your expectations in check. I think I really think it's a good 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I think the movie is a little too pat in its resolutions. Not just at the very end, but at every step of the way.
Yeah.
Compare it to something like The Life of Pi, which you mentioned, which really is not afraid of getting very, very dark at all times. I mean, it's almost, you know, it's depressing. You want to slash your wrists. It's that dark in this movie. It gets there, but almost with like kid gloves. And then it kind of is constantly skirting this PG-13. There is just enough nudity that it passes by with PG-13. And then the director, for better or for worse, kind of by doing this back and forth in time, I think he did it intentionally so that the big storm which causes their ship to break happens at the climax. At
the finale,
you know, he saves it for the finale, but that's, I think it would have been just as effective if it happened in the middle of the movie. So overall, I think this movie has more going for it than not. I maybe a 6.5 out of 10, but I'm going to bump it up to 7 out of 10. I really liked it. It was a good time at the movies for sure.
Joe?
I'm going to go with a 6 out of 10. I think the biggest problem for me is that movies like Life of Pi and All Is Lost exist. And I think they did the shipwreck drama so much more effectively than this movie. This has many more elements to it than those movies, right? It's not trying to be the same thing. But at the same time, expectations are what they are. And I wanted to feel, you know, when you call a movie Adrift, I wanted more sense of danger for the character in those moments. But that's just, you know, that's a choice that they made, just not my flavor. Okay, let's move on then. Let's keep with the ocean and go for Ocean's 8. So I guess, you're going to tell us about that?
Yeah, so, you know, the whole Ocean's franchise has a long history. The original one, you know, with Sammy Davis Jr. and Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack came out in the 70s. Late 60s, early 70s. And those, you know, wasn't a very good movie. And then Soderbergh, you know, kind of made his reboot, if you will, of that whole story with this impossibly suave, impossibly polished, impossibly sophisticated caper, which had everybody in Hollywood at that time, you know, Clooney and Matt Damon and
Brad Pitt
and, you know, Julia Roberts was in it.
Don Cheadle
and so forth.
Yeah.
And I think those movies have remarkably held up very well.
Yes.
I mean, it keeps, you know, many an HBO channel going, even now, you know, they keep showing them. And to the extent that he made two pretty proficient sequels after that, right? Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13. And then...
I do find myself just wanting to watch them every time they're on, from wherever they're on. Yeah.
They have that annoying habit of being able to suck you in.
Yes.
Regardless of, you might be halfway through or a third of the way through, just before the finale. No matter what, they kind of, you know, whatever you're doing is toast when those movies pop up.
So, you know, I'm a big Soderbergh fan. I don't think he gets nearly as much credit for what he, I mean, it's not easy to make those capers, those lighthearted capers, which are incredibly sophisticated. But here we are in 2018. For good or for bad, the decision was made to do a female reboot, where essentially Danny Ocean's sister. So Danny Ocean was the lead character, played by George Clooney in those Soderbergh films, and here we have now his sister, played by Sandra Bullock, who takes on. She's also a con man or a con woman, and the movie starts with her kind of getting out on parole from being in prison, and she's determined to run one big heist. This movie is directed by Gary Ross, and Gary Ross, I looked him up. I mean, he made the movie Big, which I just absolutely love, the one with Tom Hanks, and he's made a lot of movies. He directed Pleasantville, he directed Seabiscuit, he directed Mr. Baseball, and then, you know, he directed the Hunger Games films as well, and he's recruited now for the female version of Ocean's 8. And clearly, as far as female cast members go, this movie really stands up ahead. You know, I can't think of a more recent film which has so many big name female actors. So we have, in addition to Sandra Bullock, we have Cate Blanchett, we have Anne Hathaway, we have Sarah Paulson, Helena Bonham Carter, Rihanna, as well as Mindy Kaling. So quite a big cast there. And the story is credited to Gary Ross and Olivia Milch, and it's directed by Gary Ross as well. And essentially, it's the story of these women getting together in an effort to steal this storied and impossibly valued diamond necklace during the course of the Met's annual event in New York City. And that's pretty much the story of Ocean's 8. So, you know, on the heels of the Ghostbusters female reboot, here's another female reboot of a beloved property. Cheap gimmick or worth it?
Gimmick, totally. I was going to actually start off with that word. I mean, I think, you know, we've spoken so highly of the other Ocean's movies, and I think they stopped making them because there really wasn't much more to do with the franchise. So here they've just done a gender swap. And unfortunately, the characters here, you know, sassy and sharp as they've tried to make them, don't hold up to the fun of the characters that we had in the, you know, the Steven Soderbergh original and all of the subsequent sequels. The movie just plays out exactly the way that you would expect it to, and it's the kind of thing we've seen it all before, and it does its best to kind of do the sleight of hand thing. You know, it's about a heist, but, you know, as is always the case with Ocean's movies, there's you know, a little bit of a plot twist and turn here and there and double crosses and that kind of thing. But honestly, it barely maintained my interest, which is heartbreaking because this cast was wonderful. And they you could see that they were really, really giving it their all. And somehow the movie just managed to kind of stay in that slightly above average range. And that shouldn't have been the case here. You know, when you're rebooting this with a whole new cast, this movie should have been the one that needed to be made, that should have fought its way onto the screen just by virtue of the fact that the story was so compelling. Instead, we just got another dose with a gender swap.
Joe stole my notes this week. Nah. I mean, look, do we really need an all-female version of the Ocean series? You know, as you mentioned, Yazdi, like the Ghostbusters one a few years ago. You know, I think there's a reason, like you said, Joe, they didn't make an Ocean's 14 yet, and fingers crossed that they don't. And I do think there's a place for an all-female scam movie. But why make it an Ocean's movie? I'm not sure it worked overall. Although it's enjoyable in the moment and it kept me entertained mildly. Most of all, and I keep thinking about this throughout my review as I was writing it, it just felt very forced and overdone. The two people who I think saved this movie, Anne Hathaway, stole the show in my mind. And I can't believe I'm going to say this. I loved Helena Bonham Carter in this.
Mm-hmm. She was very good, yeah.
She was really good. But just forced and overdone. Forced. That's the word that just keeps coming to my mind.
I'm sorry, before I let you talk, was there a connection to the other Oceans movies? Because I couldn't make the link.
Yeah. Yeah, so they say that, and I. This is actually one of the points I was going to make. So again, Yazdi, not to stop you from doing your intro, but did we know that Danny Ocean dies at the end of Ocean's 13?
No.
Because she comes to his grave, right? She comes to his grave. So she's his sister.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
That's the connection. That's, but that's, yeah, that's exactly. Forced.
Of course,
So she's Deborah Ocean. She's a sister.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I'm pretty sure Ocean's 13 did not have George Clooney's character die. It's
exactly.
been a while since I watched it. So I think they took that liberty. I think he's presumed dead. If they want to resurrect him, they can do it anytime, I suspect. But yeah. I think these are such great actors. I mean, not all of them maybe consistently, but Anne Hathaway, you know, she gets a lot of flack. She's universally hated ever since she won that Oscar and everybody thinks she's Miss Goody Two Shoes. But she can bring that, you know, train to the station. And she has a more difficult role and she doesn't have a lot of screen time and she just completely nails it. So I think there is a great film to be made about, like you said, like scheming con women. Like Dirty Rotten Scoundrels was a great film to be made with this particular cast, with Cate Blanchett and with Sandra Bullock and with Anne Hathaway. But I think you need a director who has the panache of somebody like Soderbergh or somebody who is going to just take with it and run with it and make it impossibly exciting. So I'm thinking of somebody like Brian De Palma, or I'm thinking of somebody like Tarantino. I think if you put somebody like that, whose brand is bigger than these actors, then they could have really made something really exciting and fresh. But unfortunately, they rely on these actors to bring their brand here, and the actors cannot do much without, you know, a really tight, exciting script. I think a lot of the reviews have mentioned that the reason why it all feels a little bit undercooked is because there is no bad guy in the movie. There's no real great stakes. The worst that can happen is all of them will go to jail. So, you know, you don't feel that sense of danger, you know, as much. And, you know, I'm reminded of a film which wasn't a big hit at all, but it was a minor film made by Brian De Palma called Femme Fatale, which had Rebecca Romaine Stamos. And the first half hour of the movie is identical to the premise of this movie, where Rebecca Romaine plays the femme fatale, and mm-hmm. She does this impossible. She impossibly steals this necklace from this supermodel at a fashion show, and just watch from a craft perspective and from a tension perspective how this whole first half hour of that movie is done. And Brian De Palma just makes it like a breathless, like it's amazingly done. It's kind of sleazy and nasty and it's so beautifully done. And this one never really reaches a full boil, right? It kind mm-hmm. of whimpers along, and you kind of have to rely on the, like, what is Rihanna doing there? I have no idea. God forbid, I'd never thought I'd say the day, but what is Cate Blanchett doing here?
I mean, agree.
She has nothing to do in this movie.
I agree.
I'm shocked. I mean,
she's really playing the Brad Pitt role, right? Like, if you do an equivalence, you know, study between Oceans and the male Ocean series and the female Ocean series,
right.
It's a one-for-one, in a sense, matchup. And I wish that they had had the guts to even do completely different roles, right? Even if we'd had something completely different. And I hate to say this, but there's a lot of filler and Botox, mm-hmm. and that's just Sandra Bullock. I mean, really, what has the lady done to her face? I felt terrible for her because you couldn't see any acting. The one thing I will give it is that I do like that it didn't rely on just feminine wiles for the clever scam. I do like that there were things besides women using their feminine wiles to kind of get past every hurdle. So I'll give it that. I mean, there are some really funny bits, but overall it's just meh.
I mean, the movie does, I don't know, it's a spoiler, but I think the movie does, after the heist plays out as it does, you know, there's a lot more of the movie left, which kind of surprised me. And, you know, there's some double, triple crosses, but even those come off kind of a little bit lukewarm.
There were?
Right.
Yeah.
I don't even remember them.
I agree. I mean, I think that was potentially the moving saving grace.
Right.
And you're right. It's toothless.
Yeah, and I was surprised. I mean, maybe in retrospect, I shouldn't be. You know, there's all these big name actors, and it became very obvious to me that this was Sandra Bullock's movie, that she is there just like, you know, the Ocean's 11, 12, 13 are, they're George Clooney movies, and everybody else is kind of, you know, helping him. This is right. A Sandra Bullock movie.
Right.
And I don't know, I think it needed a little bit more tension. It needed a little bit more, like there is this, to give you an example, the first time that Sandra Bullock meets Kate Blanchett, there's a very, very definite suggestion that they were ex-lovers.
Yeah.
But the movie just doesn't want to go anywhere with that. Leaves and it's it like, alone, neither here right. nor neither there. Just be bold about it. You know, just
or don't.
Be, right, or don't. Don't, yeah, you know, why what's introduce the point it? Of being halfway there, you
yeah.
know? So just, it feels like such a failed opportunity. Like, what were they afraid of? That middle-class America will not, you know, will poo-poo it? But then, I don't know. I mean, it's not the end of the world. I still would watch those actors anytime, even in a bad movie. So I didn't hate it, but could have been better.
I mean, this is the thing. One of the strengths of Sandra Bullock is her incredible comedic timing and her physical comedy. And she got to do none of that in here. There's maybe one scene where she's, you know, during the heist when it's a one gag. But I mean, that's why you employ Sandra Bullock, because she's incredibly funny. And let's not forget that she's carried some really good movies.
But would you have hired somebody else then for that role?
No, I would have had her do something different. But she was so guarded. It was such a guarded performance and so unemotional. That it just, I think, toothless and forced. That the words. I'm ready to wrap this one up, unless you guys have anything more to say about this. I mean, for me, this is definitely a back of the plane movie. Like the movie, I'll force myself to give this a 5 out of 10. This could have been so much better, or it shouldn't have been done at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that a female-only movie gets made with all these big-name actors and whatever.
But then make it good.
But yeah, I think if they're going to make an Ocean's 9 at all, then I think they need to hire a real crackerjack director, and they need to get a really crackerjack script. Even I think the stakes need to be considerably higher. And you know, I would only show the example of Soderbergh's latest film where he did a heist. Remember last year?
That was brilliant.
You know, so instead of watching this movie, you know, go watch Logan Lucky.
Logan Lucky, yeah.
Yes.
And Logan Lucky is a heist movie, which is, you know, a small scale heist movie with no name actors. It's got Adam Driver and Daniel Craig.
Channing Tatum
and Daniel Craig. And that movie, for its complexity and for its slickness and for its humor and the way it all tightly clicks with each other, see how Soderbergh still does it.
And funny on a
much, much
lower. And puts the ensemble cast to much, brilliant much ensemble better cast. Use. Yeah.
So 6 out of 10.
Yeah, adequate entertainment in the moment, honestly. I mean, I can't say that I wanted to, you know, run out of the theater. So, you know, I think for what it set out to do, it did an okay job. I just wanted this movie to be, yeah, you know, the
knock
sequel.
It out of the park, yeah.
Yeah, though, you know, when you have this talent, it felt like all the budget was spent on hiring the people.
We didn't even mention Sarah Paulson.
She actually had a lot to do, but you know, Sarah Paulson can do.
I mean, she's amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, and again, I think the other thing that's happening is in these large ensemble movies casts. I mean, it's just hard for everyone to have a good bit.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly don't know. Sorry to keep repeating myself. I don't know why Kate Blanchett signed up for this. She does nothing in the whole movie. Have you realized that? She had nothing to do in the whole movie. She was just like
filler.
She was like the smart person who was standing next to Sandra Bullock.
She got to do a modern role. I mean, it's the first time we haven't seen her in a costume piece or a period piece. So I think If nothing else, it added something to her resume, and she probably got a big payday for turning up and looking great. And she looks amazing. Oh,
she looks amazing.
She looks really hard ass in this.
Yeah. But anyway.
All right. Enough.
On to something quite different than Hereditary.
Yes, his favorite. Yay. Yes. A horror movie.
Yes. So Hereditary is by first-time writer and director Ari Aster, who looks like, you know, Beth Accomando was mentioning he looks 12 years old. But I did see a picture of him. He doesn't look 12, but he looks maybe 14. But it's his writing and directorial debut. And this movie originally premiered at the Midnight Section at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year in 2018. And I guess that's where the buzz, you know, got built, and people said this is one of the great horror movies, and that it equals the Exorcist. And you know, it came with a lot of fanfare, and in particular, Toni Collette's performance was being lauded. And even before the movie got released, there was a lot of talk that maybe she might garner an Oscar, and that she got, you know, robbed of a nomination even for The Sixth Sense, and this would be the one that would, you know, get her. You know, get her due recognition. So the movie came with a lot of fanfare, and it was released earlier this month. And I think it's done reasonably well at the box office. The movie stars Alex Wolff, Gabriel Byrne, Toni Collette, as I mentioned, Millie Shapiro, Mallory Bechtel, and Jake Brown. And it tells the story of a woman whose mom, the family matriarch, passes away. And following her death, the grieving family starts to be haunted by strange, tragic, and disturbing occurrences, which makes them question if their grandmother had some dark, deep secrets buried prior to her passing. So that, hence the title Hereditary. I, you know, taking, savoring my sleep and making sure that...
And your peace of mind.
My peace of mind, wisely or maybe unwisely, chose not to watch this movie because I'm a wimp. So I haven't seen it, but the two of you have. So tell us, Hereditary.
So unlike Yazdi, who has a hate relationship with horrors, I have a somewhat love-hate relationship with them. And I was excited to see this movie because, A, like you said, Yazdi, the hype got out at Sundance. This was an amazing movie. And B, I love Toni Collette. For me, mm-hmm. I've never seen Toni Collette do a bad performance. That said, I was pooping in my pants in anticipation before the movie started. And I even wrote down in my book before the movie started, I'm not going to wear my glasses.
Oh, okay.
Right? Because that's I was like, ooh, maybe that way I won't be so scared if I don't see all the expressions. this was a letdown.
Oh.
I can't believe I'm saying this. I think I wanted to be more scared. And although there are parts which are hands over eyes scary, this literally evaporated from my head the moment the credits rolled.
Huh. Really? Okay. Maybe I should watch it.
Yeah. And I can say more once Joe's done his bit.
Yeah. This movie came with some amount of fanfare and anything with Toni Collette in it.
Exactly.
Definitely, you know, piques my attention. And what I'll say about the movie is it's the director's clearly showing his ability to build fear and shoot. I mean, the movie is very, very cleverly shot. You know, from the opening shot, where, you know, there's a kind of a change of scale. That's I'll kind of leave it there. That's used in a couple of other instances in the movie to, you know, just the shot through a window to a yard with a treehouse with a light that, you know, pops up and, you know, he's very able to create that kind of suspense and dread. Unfortunately, I think the movie was a little too slow for me. It really did kind of burn its way along this kind of meandering path that, you know, yes, there are a couple of very scary moments, and the movie certainly does have a finale, but it ultimately didn't work well as a scary movie. You have The Conjuring, you know, the kind of movies that, you know, I'm not a huge horror fan either, but, you know, They're tremendously fun because they're...
Or even
they're,
Oculus.
They're not fun. They're horrifying.
They're horrifying, but it's right. You're giddy with numbers of laughter.
Especially if you go and watch them in a cinema setting, right, which you always should, I think.
And this movie didn't seem to give me those, you know, don't go there kind of moments.
Maybe once,
there were some
yeah.
horrific plot points, which, you know, from a horror perspective... You know, did really kind of they were kind of upsetting emotionally in more ways than kind of horrific, and you know certainly the movie goes to this bonkers place which we'll talk about in a second, but it just committed the cardinal sin for me for a horror movie of not being scary enough.
Yeah, so let's go there. I mean, I think Joe, you started to sort of hit on it. There are definitely things to admire, right? No one's safe. And there's a death early on, and this isn't a spoiler, that I was really surprised about. But I was never quite sure of what the story actually was. It seemed like there were a lot of threads that never seemed to quite come together
right. And
then deliver in the end. Right. So there was no payoff.
Couldn't they just run away out of the house?
It's not one of those stories, right?
Okay.
And so... Then what happens is
the
end is just too unbelievable. And I don't know if this is a spoiler, but frankly, all the naked old people were the scariest things about this movie.
Yeah.
And I'll just leave it out there.
Well, it's not a spoiler. And I think the problem is the movie doesn't build to that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there is some funny stuff going on and...
Like ha-ha funny or like no, scary funny?
No, there's something strange. Right. There's something right. weird happening, right?
You know, it's related to the grandmother's passing, but it doesn't really link itself to that. And then at the end of the movie, they provide explanations to what has been going on. But unfortunately, it didn't build us there, right? There weren't kind of enough elements of that thread kind of thrown in
to give you the payoff,
kind of
like
say,
that's what this is about, right?
You know, and suddenly your mind flashes back through all these moments in the movie and like, oh my god, that's
I missed that. Oh, why didn't I see
that? Is it the kind of thing where it leaves enough unanswered questions to make you kind of try and fit the puzzle together?
No.
Or there isn't enough there to fit the puzzle?
No, it completely reveals itself.
Oh, okay.
And then you think, well, that's kind of nonsensical.
And it doesn't make you care enough about the characters that you even worry about, oh, that's what was happening. It's just like, oh,
look,
I'm glad this is over.
You can't introduce 10 or 20 new faces at the end of a movie and expect the audience to make sense of what has happened all the way through. I mean, you just can't do that. It doesn't make sense from a plot perspective. Unless I missed something that was very obvious, because I think there is a lot of subtlety to this movie, and I think, you know, I tend to need to be hit around the face with a wet fish to kind of understand any plot point. So
I generally don't. I mean, I can generally read between the lines, but either these lines are teeny tiny narrow, or I'm completely missing the point. And Joe, again, you know, you and I are so aligned this week. It's one of those that's either for me been over edited, or there is just too much between the lines that we should have been a more sophisticated audience to pick up on it. But certainly, you know, it didn't deliver on the promise that it set out on. I think this is great acting by Toni Collette. She does deliver. I was also going to say, you know, great sound production and mixing. And I was going to say something, but you're right. It was a spoiler, so I won't even mention that, but that was well done. I mean, again, I can sum this up. I think it does general weirdness very effectively, and this may be a reasonable B movie in the end, I don't know, but I don't want to see this family grow anymore. You know, I'm really disappointed. I mean, for me, it's really a 4 out of 10.
Oh
wow.
Yeah.
Gosh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll say that the movie is incredibly well crafted. I think it's clear to me that the director had a vision, and that vision was realized. I just think, and it was also incredibly well acted and performed. I think You know, performance-wise, we get, you know, a wonderful Toni Collette performance.
Sure.
Even though I felt that the
and
script...
And Gabriel Byrne.
But I think the script was overcooked in places so that, you know, Toni Collette's character has to deal with, you know, bereavement and loss. And, you know, she has those big screaming moments. But again, I don't feel like they were earned.
Yes.
So you get... Something horrible happens. And, of course, as a mother... You know, as a family member in this family, you know, there's screaming and you know, distraught. Oh, you know, but the movie never gets us. Never, you know, she has to sell it, as opposed to so you know, again, actor doing their thing brilliantly well, but the movie never seems to earn those moments. So, yeah, I don't know what to give this. This is going to be demonic this week. I'm going to be like 666 for all three movies because it's not horrible. It's just not the piece of greatness that I think
yeah.
we were led to believe with all of the talk of the movie. And frankly, the end of the movie is bonkers mad. It makes no sense.
Yeah.
It's trying to give shock factor. But it's just
silly.
It ends up coming off as silly.
Yeah.
And again,
I love bonkers. I love bonkers.
I mean, Rashmi, you are somehow out of tune with the rest of the reviews.
It says
harrowing, uncommonly settling film whose cold touch lingers long beyond the closing credits. That's Rotten Tomatoes critics consensus.
It's the opposite of what I said.
As soon as the credits played, by the time I was in the car, I was like, that was a bit boring and it was completely nuts.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Maybe you need to see it, Yazdi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we'll do a post review. What did Yazdi think? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you see it during the day, you will not have any trouble sleeping.
Okay.
Famous last words.
Yeah, as I was told before Conjuring.
Now, Rashmi just lied.
I ruined my sleep for weeks. Anyway, I think this podcast has gone on too long.
Let's wrap it up.
We should have a drinking game every time Yazdi mentions The Conjuring
yes.
and how it wasn't meant to be scary.
All right. Well, thank you for listening. We are at 45 minutes or so of babbling away here.
Bantering.
On a podcast. So, you can find us at facebook.com/movierollers, at twitter.com/movierollers, at instagram.com/movierollers, and our main website, www.movierollers.com, which of course you know because you're listening to this. So until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.